Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham, and I've got Jeff Fife joining me here, as we're going to do every Thursday. And Jeff and I are going to talk some UVA sports, some New Japan Pro Wrestling, and we'll see what else we get into. Jeff, busy sports week as the new year is upon us here, and ACC basketball and wrapping up football. I guess there's a lot for us to get into today.
Yeah, there's a ton of things to talk about. Happy New Year. And I'm not actually physically with you because you are sick again. We're going to have to get you drinking milk and vitamin C. So we're doing this remotely from afar. Between the WWE locker room and your house, there is some sickness flowing around in this joyful country. So I'm happy to hear your voice is solid and strong, but I'm also excited to be doing this podcast far away from you right now so I don't get any of your joyful germs.
Yeah, well, I hope it stays strong. You know, I tried to do a podcast, I think it was yesterday, and I did it by myself. No, actually, it was Tuesday. Did it by myself, and I started strong, and I didn't end strong. So, you know, but I got a tag team partner today. So if I got to tag out, you know, you got to take some beating for me there as I recover on the outside of the ring.
I'll carry it for you if need be, but I think you're going to be good. And I'm talking of your Tuesday podcast, you're sort of doing a preview of what the Virginia Tech game would be like. Could you have imagined now that after this is over that Virginia would dominate the Hokies quite like they did last night in Castle?
You know, I thought the tea leaves told me a Virginia win was forthcoming. I thought it would be an 8 to 10 point win. I certainly didn't foresee what we ended up with, which is a game that Virginia led by 30 points for much of the second half, ended up winning by 26. But, you know, Virginia Tech had been trending downward the last few games. You know, the Syracuse loss on Sunday night, they shot a season low. I think it was 32% in that game, scored 56 points, also a season low. But even their previous two games, which were their last two non-conference games, NCA&T and Presbyterian, you know, over that stretch of three games, Virginia Tech scored 65 a game. Their average over the season, 88.8 a game, at least coming into last night, they'd average 88.8 a game. They'd shot 44% in those three games, even going into last night, even with that stretch. The Hokies still led the nation in field goal shooting, 53.2%, but you saw that some things were trending downward for Virginia Tech. And it's not like a guy's hurt. I mean, all their players are healthy. It's just that, you know, this Virginia Tech team since the Christmas break basically hasn't been the same Virginia Tech team. And so, you know, you don't want to try to get healthy offensively against Tony Bennett teams. So that was prescription for disaster for Virginia Tech. But Virginia, you know, we saw the game against Boston College on Saturday. Virginia won the game. It was a struggle, though, 59 points in the win. And so I thought Virginia would go on the road. It's the first ACC road game for Virginia. I thought they'd win the game, but no. You know, the defensive effort I foresaw, 78 points from the offense, especially with no one really going off. Like, we saw Ty Jerome score 31 against Boston College. You know, the leading scorer last night was DeAndre Hunter off the bench, playing the four because of the lack of depth. Right now in the post, Hunter scores 14. You have Guy with 13, Hall with 13, and Jerome also in double figures, and they still score 78 points. So, no, I didn't foresee that part, and I certainly didn't foresee the ease with which Virginia, you know, had that game. They had a 10-point lead 8 minutes into the game and really never looked back.
Yeah, and it seems like Virginia Tech was the team that had the balanced scoring coming into the game with five players averaging over double digits, and yet it was Virginia that put the balance across the board. You referenced Ty Jerome's 14 and his 31 previous. Last time you and I chatted on the podcast, we were questioning whether Ty Jerome would lose minutes to Nigel Johnson. Fast forward a week and a half and a new year and a couple holidays in between, and he's the ACC player of the week and looks like one of the most dangerous weapons in the ACC. What type of confidence is he playing with now, and what can we expect from him moving forward?
I think what is working really well now for Ty Jerome and Tony Bennett, the way they're using Ty Jerome, you know, on paper he's the point guard, but Virginia's offense doesn't really need a point guard like, you know, some offenses do, a guy to bring the ball up the court and distribute and play that role. Because the way Virginia plays with three guards and two forwards, and the two forwards mainly setting screens for the guards, you know, Tony Bennett's offense relies on all three of those guards to be able to bring the ball up the court, run the offense when necessary. And so, you know, so Jerome doesn't need to have that pressure to bring the ball up the court. Now, Virginia Tech, you know, is more like a team. They play a full court press when they score. The hard part last night, they didn't score a lot, but they will set up the pressure defense full court, and also they'll mix in some three quarter court traps, half court traps. So they do try to take the ball out of the point guard's hands or whoever brings the ball out of the court's hands. But last night, you know, their ball pressure is not anything close to what we saw from West Virginia. That's the game where, you know, Jerome really struggled against West Virginia. And that seemed to zap his confidence, because that West Virginia game, even the Davidson game, which was the first game after the exam break back, he didn't seem to have that same zip that he had, you know, in the games leading up to that West Virginia game. So, you know, I think the West Virginia game took a lot out of Jerome, maybe from a confidence perspective, certainly. So he's got back on track. Certainly that Boston College game, where everything he threw towards the basket seemed to go in that game. You saw something similar last night. He didn't have the 31-point explosion, but he had 8 points early in the game in that first stretch when neither offense was getting on track. And, you know, the Hokies started, I think, 2 for 8 from the field. And you had 8 quick points from Ty Jerome, 2 three-pointers and a nice drive in the lane. He got a nice bank shot from about 5 feet. And even though he finishes with just the 13 points, you know, those 8 points really set the tone for Virginia in that game. That helped them get that 10-point lead and really helped them, you know, develop that working margin they work from. And so what I'd say about Jerome is, you know, against teams that, you know, have a point guard who can really play great ball pressure defense, maybe the solution is to have, you know, Devin Hall, Kyle Guy, maybe Nigel Johnson when he's off the bench, have those guys bring the ball up the court, maybe initiate the offense, and use Jerome more as a 2 or a 3 guard, you know, and have him catch the ball off screens, either shoot the open 3, drive in the lane, because that's what he's really good at. And he also last night was good at dishing off those drives, and maybe less of the primary ball handling responsibilities. That might be the best way to use Ty Jerome, because we've seen it the last couple of games, and he's really effective playing that role.
UVA's bringing a fascinating swagger onto the court. I mean, I remember seeing the recruiting tape of Ty Jerome on the streets of New York City, literally on blacktop, were some of the tapes, the mixtapes that all are being made with the kids coming up, and you could just see some of his flair and flash and confidence. Guy getting rid of the man bun, but certainly no short of confidence in the game that he brings and the swagger that he brings. Isaiah playing with some attitude. Jack Salt firing away and swatting out, you know, back-to-back blocks with jump starts, a 15-0 run for the Cavaliers. They seem to be playing with a level of confidence and swagger that we haven't, you know, seen for a little while. Even though they've been a dominating team and a top 20 team for quite some time, it just feels like a different Virginia team. And going into Castle and leveling the Hokies on their home floor, and actually it's the first time I've seen a Buzz Williams team quit defeated. I mean, you take the timeout at the 22-minute deficit, the timeout at the 32-minute deficit, no answer, none. Dominated, destroyed, one of the most beautiful things I have witnessed here in the past 10 years or 8 with the Bennett era. You know, is there something different about this team?
I think it's the depth of talent. I mean, Tony Bennett has always used an 8, 9, or even 10-man rotation. Last year you saw him, you know, sometimes use a 10-man rotation. But last year I think it was because he was still trying to figure out who could produce. And so, you know, he had 10 players who could play, but not all those guys were as productive maybe. But this year you've got a guy like DeAndre Hunter, who I mentioned led the team in scoring last night. Again, second time this season Hunter has led the team in scoring. And he does so in an ACC game. And 6 different guys have led this team in scoring this year. That says a lot about this team, because you're talking about, I mean, I think Kyle Guy is a first-team All-ACC guy when this season's over. Ty Jerome's probably a second- or third-team All-ACC guy, and I'm saying that, and he may, you know, play his way up higher up that list too. But, you know, those two guys have led the team in scoring. You have Devin Hall, who's a fifth-year senior. You know, people forget about Devin Hall. When he came out of high school, he was the hotshot point guard recruit. In fact, he was a more heralded point guard recruit than London Perentes was. Now, Hall had an injury between his final senior season in high school and starting at UVA that put him behind the eight ball. Perentes ends up getting the starting job, starts for 4 years. You know, now he's in the NBA. But Hall had a pedigree that you forget about because he's been there so long. So you got Guy, you got Jerome, you got Hall, you got Hunter, who is a guard but played a lot at the four last night because There's still a little question about Jay Huff's ability to play defense at the four right now in the pack line. So Hunter at 6'7", hey, you know, you're a guard. We're going to play you at you're going to play you at forward. You're going to play 24 minutes and score 14 points. You know, Diakite only played 11 minutes last night because of foul trouble, but had 9 points, looked really good in the post, 4 or 5 from the floor. You know, he's had 3 double-digit games this year. Isaiah Wilkins has led this team in scoring. So, you know, outside of Jack Salt, who has his own sublime contributions to the offense, his screen setting, you mentioned the block shots last night, you know, his ability to at least catch the ball when flush when, you know, Tech was full-court pressing and Virginia beat the full-court press. You know, he had a couple of dunks at the end of those plays. But this is a team that, and Nigel Johnson, I didn't mention, he didn't have a great game last night, but he, you know, got the ball up the floor a few times against that pressure defense. He's led this team in scoring it this season. So you've got 7 guys that on any given night can score 20 points for you. And then you've got Jack Salt, who is, you know, his stats don't show it. The only stat that does show it is defensive efficiency stat when you look at KenPom.com. He is an other level, a next level defensive player, you know, top one of the top guys nationally defensively. And so, yeah, there's a reason for Swagger. There's a lot of talent out there, and he's only got to go 8 deep. And, you know, as a result, you know, you're not talking about guys maybe, you know, who are expected to contribute who then don't get to play for 2 or 3 games. They're getting their minutes every night and able to contribute, and I think you're going to see this team. It's only 2 games in the ACC season, but I think you're going to see this team really gel quickly. And they're already playing pretty well, but this team's going to just get better as January, February, into March roll on.
You referenced how Nigel Johnson getting the ball across, you know, half court. It did not seem Virginia was intimidated at all by Virginia Tech's pressure. I mean, they went 23 minutes at one point without a turnover, 5 or 6 total in the game. Just cool hand loot on the basketball court in Castle. I hear some Hokie fans on social media complaining about this game being 9 o'clock and not around the students, and I don't want to hear any of that bitching and moaning. You know, they got their 14-year football reign. Take your medicine on the basketball court, and boy, did you last night. I mean, is the West Virginia's and maybe even VCU's a little bit pressure preparing Virginia for the ACC? Any pressure? Because right now it doesn't look like they're going to be rattled.
Oh, yeah, I think the reason, you know, you schedule – there's lots of approaches to scheduling non-conference. Virginia Tech, outside of the game at Kentucky, scheduled a very weak non-conference schedule. And you saw that. I mean, the loss to Syracuse, the loss to Virginia, double-digit losses both. They got blown out on their home floor last night. They're not ready for ACC play. You know, and I think they'll be better. I mean, they got a lot of talent on their roster. And so they're gonna step up to ACC level of play, but they're not there yet. Whereas Tony Bennett traditionally, and in the last several years particularly, you know, you go to VCU. You don't play they're doing a home-and-home with VCU, but this year you're on the road at VCU. You're playing that Havoc, 40 minutes of hell, full-court pressure defense. They full-court press off of missed free throws. I mean, that gets you ready. You go to West Virginia in Morgantown and play, you know, their very unique pressure defense. You know, it's ball pressure and – you know, traps, half court and three quarter court traps. So yeah, now you play Virginia Tech. You know, that full court pressure last night was very, very pedestrian. You know, and that's why you only saw the 6 turnovers. You know, the West Virginia's defense is the best defense we've seen this year. I think that we'll see this year, outside of the defense Virginia plays against itself in practice. And so yeah, when you play a team like Virginia Tech, you know, you're ready for that because you've played better than that. And I can't think right now that we've seen anybody like a Syracuse, but, you know, Tony tries to schedule teams, you know, because you do play some unique styles in the ACC. You know you're going to play a press against Virginia Tech. You're going to play that 2-3 zone that Jim Boeheim coaches. So you try to schedule ahead, and Tony's done a great job of that. And I think you see that this, you know, last night particularly, Virginia was ready for ACC play, and Tech just not quite ready.
We talked 12, 13 minutes into this podcast and haven't really mentioned the defense. Boy, that defense just looked tough. And I know Syracuse gave it to Virginia Tech, too, and some of the trending on their offense is starting to slow down. But it doesn't seem like anyone has had a whole lot of success over a 40-minute period against Virginia's defense. Is this one of the most dominant defensive units that Tony has put on the floor in his era?
I think it has that potential. I wrote in my post-game column last night, you know, looking strictly right now at the KenPom.com efficiency numbers, you know, which are, you know, points per possession is the big metric that you go by, both offense and defense. From a points per possession perspective, this team right now is giving up 0.853 points per possession. That's 85 points for every 100 possessions. Now, the team from 2015 started 28-1, you know, fizzled down the stretch. That was the year Justin Anderson got hurt late, and they kind of, you know, struggled getting him back into the lineup late. Still finished 30-4. That team had a 0.855 points per possession. So right now, this team is ahead of them. Now, of course, we got ACC play still to go, so that number will probably fluctuate a bit, certainly as we go on. But at this stage, this team is just a tick ahead of that 2015 team, which was one of the best defensive teams in the last 15 years of college basketball from a points per possession perspective. So, you know, and what I like about this team is, you know, that team from a couple of years ago, there was a Mike Toby was a shot blocker, a 7-foot shot blocker at the back end. You know, he put numbers on the board, rebounding and shot block wise. But of course, he had a couple of future pros and Justin Anderson and Malcolm Brogdon out front. But this team, it just, again, I talked about depth earlier. I think the depth of this group is the selling point for what it does defensively. You got Isaiah Wilkins, who was, of course, part of that 2015 team as a freshman. Now as a senior this year, you know, he's you know, if not the best, he's one of the top two or three post defenders in the country. You've got Jack Salt, who doesn't put big numbers up, but, you know, nobody – Kerry Blackshear last night as an example. You know, Kerry Blackshear is a guy who's been eating up teams all year long in the post, and last night struggled to get his points. And so, you know, you've got guys on the perimeter. Kyle Guy didn't come to Virginia as a defensive player, but now he's a stellar defensive player. Ty Jerome's another guy. You know, out of high school, you know, you don't get, you know, 4- and 5-star ratings out of high school for your defense. You get them for your offense, and you come to Virginia, you learn how to play defense. Those guys are just sophomores, and they're already playing, you know, London Parentes, Malcolm Brogdon, Justin Anderson type, you know, upper class defense. And so, yeah, I think this team has that potential. And Nigel Johnson, actually, his speed is interesting too defensively. You know, he's still – you can see last night there was a – I can't think who made the three-point shot over him. He's still learning his responsibilities in the pack line, but he adds an extra dimension both on offense and defense with his speed. We've not seen a guy that speedy since, I think, Jontel Evans early in the Tony Bennett era, a holdover from the Dave Leto era, in terms of what he brings in speed at the natural point guard position. So, yeah, this team is different. But all those guys can play interchangeably. And I mentioned, you know, how DeAndre Hunter, you know, played the four a lot last night. In fact, played the four position exclusively. He's a guard, and he played the four. He played the power four position defensively for Virginia last night. And, you know, I've talked on podcasts previously about how NBA scouts really love DeAndre Hunter. And, of course, he's a redshirt freshman. We're really just seeing the first glimpses of him this year. He's respected as much for his offensive game and his defensive game as well, actually has the attention of scouts. So, you know, this is a team that has a lot of potential, and I think we're just scratching the surface of what we're going to see out of this team.
And as Virginia really gets churned into their ACC schedule, I asked 2 weeks ago or so, pre-ACC, who you thought if you had to, you know, wave the magic wand, you know, who is going to end up being get the four byes in the ACC tournament heading out there. I'm curious to see if any of that has changed after the first two games. It's early yet, and you've got an interesting Clemson team that's won 9 in a row now, and Duke is Duke, you know, and Notre Dame loses a critical player in their offense, but is still, you know, they posted an impressive victory here recently with 30 points as well. You know, who's your top four? You know, I'll ask this every Thursday now as we stare down, you know, getting into February and when the ACC tournament rolls around in March. You know, who do you think is your top four and has a chance to get the bye?
Well, I'll tell you first off, I'll drop Notre Dame out, and no offense to them, they won that. They beat NC State impressively last night at home. But there's no way. They're missing Bonzi Colson for at least 2 months. And I really question, he's got a foot injury. I'll kind of reiterate what Dan Bonner said on the broadcast last night. It's hard to imagine a guy coming back from a foot injury. Right now the timetable is first week of March. You know, I don't know if he's going to contribute to that team this year. And with that, their rotation is so thin, it's hard to imagine Notre Dame without Bonzi Colson really, you know, being a factor at the top of the ACC this year. So I'm going to start with two. And I'm gonna, I don't know if there's a one or a two. I'm gonna call them 1A and 1A because I think they're tied right now. It will be Duke and Virginia. And I'll say, and I'm only giving Duke the that level, that line on the cart there because, you know, of their talent. You know, right now they're still, I think they're playing well under their capacity, and I'm not sure they'll ever get to their ceiling because defensively I think they're going to struggle. You know, they're playing two big guys, 2 7-footers who are going to have trouble in the modern game. Defensively, now they create offensive matchup problems for everybody as well. But defensively, you know, very few teams even have one guy who, you know, you really have to worry about in the post. And so most teams go with four, effectively what we would have called 5 years ago, four-guard lineups. I mean, we saw Virginia again last night, DeAndre Hunter playing the four a lot. A lot of teams go with what would have been considered four guards. I mean, it's actually what's taken over the NBA too. You know, the Cavaliers and Warriors in the NBA play 4 and 5 guard lineups a lot. And win championships doing so. So, you know, with Duke with 2 7-footers out there, and you've got to keep them on the floor because they're so talented offensively. But defensively, you know, Krzyzewski's had to resort to playing a very basic 2-3 zone defense, and his two guys aren't really quick enough to get out on the wings to, you know, to make 3-point shooters respect that. So, you know, they're going to score a lot of points. They're going to give up a lot of points. We saw that their win over Florida State last week, 193 win, and really had to rally late to pull that one out. You're going to see Duke play a lot of those type games, and they're going to be a team that, yes, they'll beat the heck out of some teams, but I think when March comes around, they're going to get beat by somebody like a Boston College, you know, for example, who beat them, you know, last month in Chestnut Hill, who has no right beating them just because, you know, Duke can't guard anybody. Virginia, you know, I would love to put them alone on that top pedestal, but, you know, I want to see the Carolina game this weekend, for example, and see how Virginia plays, you know, at home against, you know, obviously the defending national champions, a team they've beaten in Charlotte for the last two seasons. You know, a Carolina team that's itself is a bit wounded and reeling. We saw last night, you know, the narrow loss at Florida State. They struggled when they beat Wake Forest this past weekend. And of course, the loss to Wofford, you know, over the Christmas holiday. So, you know, a Carolina team with some talent, with some holes. You know, if Virginia can handle Carolina this weekend, you know, we talk next week. I might be talking about, you know, Virginia and then Duke. You know, I guess I'm more thinking right now about the weaknesses. Louisville, obviously, that huge loss, 30-point loss to Kentucky has to put them a couple lines down now. Syracuse looked good in beating Virginia Tech, then they lose to Wake Forest, a team that lost to Liberty earlier this season, so I can't say too much nice about Syracuse right now. Miami loses last night to Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech has some ugly losses in non-conference play. So I think, Jeff, I'm going to cop out this time by just sticking with two because I'm not sure that the other two spots deserve to be filled right now.
We wish the football season was going as well as basketball, and it's this may be the last question for a couple months to ask you on the podcast about football, but I guess putting a little bow and a wrap this holiday season on Broncos boys. You know, the best of the London era recruits transitioning out now, losing some of those, what we may see the last of the NFL guys coming up in the draft for Virginia for a while. Is there replacement for some of from the Blandings of the world, from the Browns of the world, some of those kids that we're losing? And it's real early, obviously, but do you think Virginia builds on a good 6-win season, even with the horrible loss at Navy? And do you think this is another bowl season eligible team next year?
I do. You know, literally as right before we got together for the podcast this afternoon, I literally just hit publish on my year in review for Virginia football and look ahead. And I headlined it, you know, the Mendenhall rebuild, patience. And patience is going to be the key here. You know, yeah, there's a lot of losses. I mean, Kurt Benkert's a guy, too, that, you know, the quarterback is going to be a third or fourth round pick in the draft. Micah Kizer, probably a third or fourth round pick. Blanding, maybe a second round pick. Andrew Brown, probably a day two, maybe a day three pick, you know, third, fourth, fifth round. So there's some talent clearly leaving this program, and it's going to be hard. You don't replace guys like that. You just, you know, fill in roles. But, you know, I look ahead to 2018, and a couple things come to mind. First, the schedule gets a lot easier. You know, the non-conference schedule particularly. You got William & Mary, at Indiana, but then you've also got Liberty and Ohio. So your non-conference schedule, you know, if you're 3-1 out of that, you've probably not played great football. You probably should be 4-0, but even just say 3-1, you know, your crossover games in the ACC, you know, you play two Atlantic Division teams each year. Louisville's guaranteed. Louisville is our rival, they've determined. So we play Louisville every year. Next year it's in Charlottesville. They won't have Lamar Jackson, so that's a plus for us. And then we also play NC State. And NC State's going to be a tough game, but then you play your conference, your division rivals as well. I see 3 wins there. You know, I see at least a 3-5 finish there, maybe 4. So if you win 3 and you're 3-1 at worst in your non-conference, that's 6. And I think that's the ceiling. 6, maybe 7 next year is the ceiling for this Virginia team. You know, I like what I've read about, and we haven't seen yet, obviously, but what I've read about the quarterback, the JUCO transfer from Arizona, Arizona State recruit, Bryce Perkins. He was a 4-star recruit out of high school. He'll be our first 4-star quarterback for at least the past decade, and I think going back even further. He's a dual-threat quarterback. Robert Anae, the offensive coordinator, loves dual-threat because he likes to have read option in his offense. This year we couldn't run read option. One, Binkert, you know, is not a read option type quarterback. But two, even if he was, we didn't have any depth behind him, and we didn't have a line to really block for him. So, you know, next year you have to presume the line gets better, gets deeper. I think the play calling opens up, assuming Perkins ends up being the quarterback. I think that opens up the whole offense. You still got weapons out there. You still got the Donnie Dowlings, the Olamide Zaccheauses. You know, the running game gets better, I think, when you have a read option quarterback with you know, Ellis particularly and Ham able to you know, gain some yards for you in different looks. And I think defensively, even losing 3 top guys, including 2 second team All Americans, you know, I think the future looks good to me. The guys like Bryce Hall and Brenton Nelson, you know, there's depth on defense that I feel decent about. You know, I think this team does have a chance next year to, you know, maybe not, you know, this year's team went from 2 wins to 6 wins. I don't see 6 wins to 8 or 9 next year. I think holding pattern. I think, again, 6 wins, maybe 7 wins. But looking ahead, 2019, you know, I think if guys stay healthy and, you know, we continue to build some depth and get some recruits in and get some guys bigger and faster and stronger, that 2019 team does have the potential. You know, if Bryce Perkins comes back as a second-year starting quarterback, you know, your defense gets a year older, your line gets a little bit more depth and size. I think the 2019 team could be a team that could contend for maybe a Coastal Division title.
Well, from UVA football to WWE and the world of wrestling, let's take a hard transition. Last time you and I chatted, you were really excited about Wrestle Kingdom 12 and Kenny Omega, and talked about the Omega-Jericho match. Did that particular match meet your expectations, and was that particular pairing good for business for this for the Japanese Wrestling League?
I will say, New Japan Pro Wrestling, it was a coup that they were able to sign Chris Jericho, who hasn't competed. It hasn't been that long since he competed in WWE. I think it was Survivor Series he was last there. He was on one of those elimination tag teams, you know, that recently. So to get Jericho to come in and work with Kenny Omega, who a lot of fans consider the best wrestler, individual singles wrestler in the world, was quite a coup, because New Japan is making, you know, a conscious effort to break into the U.S. wrestling market. New Japan is a company that has a history dating back 25 or more years in Japan, and American wrestling fans, you know, American wrestling nerd fans like me, have known about their product for a long time, but it's been really hard to find it on a consistent basis. You know, you're pretty much limited to YouTube, and, you know, and Japanese commentary, not even having American commentary. The quality of the reproduction wasn't that great. Well, New Japan launched an app similar to the WWE Network app a couple of months ago, and introduced it, you know, both, you know, of course, worldwide, but, you know, primarily focusing a lot on the U.S. market, including English language commentary, which is really key. I downloaded the app, and I have it on my Amazon Fire Stick, and have, you know, one thing that's good about their app versus the WWE Network app, for those who are familiar with WWE Network's app, of course, the WWE Network app gives you the ability to watch, you know, all the pay-per-view shows, the week, you know, the at least the NXT shows and some a lot of archives. But the New Japan app gives you that plus the ability to search for individual wrestlers. So you can watch, if you want to just watch all the Omega matches, you can watch. You can put Omega into a search bar, and it brings up all the Omega matches. And they're actually saved individually, so you don't have to fast forward through 3 hours of a show to watch Omega versus AJ Styles or Nakamura versus Shinsuke Nakamura, who's a WWE star now, started in New Japan a few years ago. And so there's all those matches are so easily archived and traceable. And so now I'll get back to today, Wrestle Kingdom 12. You know, the strategy was, yeah, let's get Jericho's name as part of our product, and that'll attract these U.S. fans to want to download our app for $9. Watch, having watched the match today, it was a 5-star match. I was surprised that Jericho wrestled at that level. Jericho's 47 years old. I mean, he's at least, you know, 10 years past his great prime. You know, former WWE champion, the first unified WWE champion, you know, famously beat The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin on the same night to become that first unified WWE champion back in 2001. But he's not a spring chicken anymore. And Omega's 34 years old in the prime of his career and regularly wrestles these 5-star matches, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, a 60-minute draw last year with Okada, the New Japan IWGP World Champion, who himself is, if Omega's the best wrestler in the world, Okada is 1A on that list. And so for Jericho to hang with Omega for 35 minutes like they did today and put on a great match, I'm watching it for a second time already. It was that good of a match. From looking at social media, and New Japan's going to be releasing some numbers in a couple of days as to how many people have downloaded the app. They're going to be bragging about their numbers basically by the weekend. But just looking at social media, yeah, there were a lot of people up at 2 o'clock this morning. That's when the show started. Japanese time, it was 5 o'clock Japan time, 2 o'clock Eastern time. There were a lot of people who were drinking coffee and watching wrestling basically all morning long. I didn't do that. I slept in and then have been watching it ever since. And in fact, I'm almost through the card. It's a 6-hour-long card. And I'm almost done with the show. And for fans out there, it's $9 a month. And I'm not a salesperson. I don't get any commission on this. But I'll tell you what, Jeff knows. Jeff and I watch the WWE shows on a regular basis together. Jeff usually comes over. We'll have a little viewing party and watch the shows, critique the shows afterwards. I mean, this show is WrestleMania on steroids. From beginning match to the end, you're going to see wrestling that you've really never seen before. If you're used to WWE style, it's 4 or 5 times better than that style. And, I think that the word of mouth is really going to push this brand, and it's going to be a nice competitor to WWE. And I think maybe should help, force WWE to raise its game, because New Japan is a legit threat to WWE here in the States.
WWE signing their own superstar here recently with Ronda Rousey, and we talked and try to forecast how they're going to use her, and we know now that she'll be in that first Women's Royal Rumble with 20 other lady wrestlers. Sounds like 10 of them will be NXT, and 10 of them probably some of the female wrestlers we're used to seeing on the regular cards. Does WWE position her to win the first ever Women's Royal Rumble, and is it good for her to win for WWE?
Well, I mean, it seems like she has to win because, from one perspective at least, and so that then you have to start thinking, are they going to swerve us? Because from one perspective, she has to win because logically, Ronda Rousey seems like she should be as close to the main event of WrestleMania as possible. I mean, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to have Ronda Rousey wrestling in some six woman tag team match, at 7 o'clock on that night. She should be wrestling as close to 11 o'clock as possible, at least sometime in the 10 o'clock hour. So the way to guarantee that would be to have her win the Royal Rumble and then get all the ESPN and Sports Illustrated and Google News headlines you can imagine for the 3 months between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, probably 2.5 months between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, that can help push pay-per-view buys. Because that's, you know, the thing she did in UFC was she sold pay-per-views. She main evented UFC pay-per-views, and they were among the best sellers in their history. You know, she outdrew John Jones at least a couple of times. So yeah, it makes sense from that perspective. So the only question then is, it seems so logical that do they swerve us that night, you know? And, you know, maybe make it so she loses controversially, and then, you know, we've seen this in the past. I mean, the Daniel Bryan storyline from a few years ago where he lost and then was able to wrestle his way back into the main event because they had a match at a subsequent pay-per-view. There's something possible like that, but to me, to build buzz, you want to start building that buzz as soon as possible, and her winning the Royal Rumble, just I can automatically see SportsCenter and SportsIllustrated.com and all the sports news websites going crazy over Ronda Rousey, you know, winning the Royal Rumble and main eventing WrestleMania, at least the main event from the women's perspective of WrestleMania. That seems to make the most sense, but, you know, Vince McMahon has the final decision on this, and I guess, you know, part of the decision-making process has to be, you know, what does she look like in the ring? I mean, of course, I wouldn't care if me, business perspective, I wouldn't care if she couldn't do a hammerlock. You know, she's Ronda Rousey, she'll move pay-per-views, but, you know, you want her also to look the part when she gets in the ring. So, you know, and what we saw of her at WrestleMania a couple years ago, it was a kind of awkward interaction with her and Stephanie McMahon in the ring when they had that segment with her and The Rock and Stephanie and Triple H. So, you know, I would presume that an athlete at the caliber of Ronda Rousey's probably improved a lot since then. But there's a lot of factors. I think bottom line, I think you see her win it, but there's still going to be that question until her hand is actually raised as to whether or not WWE is going to go in that direction.
Interesting news coming across the WWE ticker with Enzo being hospitalized. And it, you know, is there any updates that you've seen on that? And is I mean, you're experiencing the blue now. What are you hearing about Enzo and what he's having to deal with?
His name is Enzo Amore. He's got the flu, and you can't beat that. That's what Enzo's dealing with. There's actually a flu bug. The wrestling websites I've looked at this morning talked about a flu bug kind of taking over the WWE locker room. It started with Braun Strowman last week. Strowman was sent home from the Raw house tour, apparently with a really bad case of the flu. And Amore the house tour was in Canada for a couple of dates this past weekend, and Amore actually flew home and was going to go see a doctor, decided to skip the doctor, flew ahead to Miami where Raw was Monday night, and actually got backstage, and from what I've read, actually had a fainting spell and was sent to the doctor, ended up in a hospital with an IV in his arm with a really bad case of the flu, and a couple other wrestlers, undercard wrestlers, have come out with it too. So, you know, the locker room right now, I'm sure there's a lot of folks walking around with masks on to make sure that they don't pass whatever germs they may have already picked up. But that's the kind of thing, you know, WWE has a grueling schedule. They're on the road 300 days a year. Not a lot of time off for the guys and gals to, you know, to recover. And, you know, they're in that environment all the time. You know, we saw back in the fall, I think September and October, a viral meningitis outbreak actually took down a few guys, including Roman Reigns. You know, it's kind of like, you know, remember the staph infection issue in some NFL locker rooms from a few years ago, maybe about a decade ago. You know, these locker rooms can be breeding grounds for the spread of staph infections, meningitis, bronchitis, flus. And so right now, yeah, WWE, you know, they're looking ahead. You know, Royal Rumble is just a couple weeks away. They want to make sure everybody's healthy because I'm sure that they've got storylines already written out. And, you know, you can't have guys sick and not being able to participate. So I'm sure right now there's a lot of tension in the locker room just over who's healthy and who's not.
Well, I'm glad that you are sounding healthier and have survived 40 minutes on the podcast with no worries. I didn't have to do any heavy lifting. You carried it as always, so I'm glad you're feeling better. And we'll be back in studio together on Monday taking a look at the UNC game and probably would have the rankings, national rankings coming out and seeing if where Virginia lands in the top 10 and maybe the top 5 if they take down Carolina. What's on tap for the AFP for next couple days and this weekend?
Well, I'm glad to be recovering and continue to recover. That means I'll be courtside at JPJ on Saturday, 1 o'clock tip. UVA-UNC, it's been a heck of a game the last couple years in Charlottesville. Some really memorable games between these two teams. So we'll be there, Scott German and I, live blogging starting at 1 o'clock. That's the tip time. We'll, of course, do a post-game Facebook Live afterwards. I'll send Scott down to the media room for interviews with Coach Bennett and players. And then you and I, Jeff, will get together on Monday, and we'll further recap things. And, we'll have a couple days' perspective, I guess, to add to the goings-on on Saturday. And we'll see what else we get into.
Excellent. Well, for all of your Virginia sports, wrestling news, and in politics, make sure you stay close to the AFP. The only thing AFP can't do for you this weekend is keep you warm, so try to grab a blanket and watch the Hoos and have a great week.